So the title of the talk tonight is Waking Up from the Dream. And a few of you have come to interviews during the day and kind of complained, I don't really know what I'm doing here. What am I doing here, actually? I don't know what you're doing here. We're just doing nothing, no? Just sitting here minding our own business, not hurting anybody, doing nothing. So if you don't want to do nothing, you're really welcome to go back out there, start again, work all day. But to be in, just to take a serious tone for a moment, I really feel quite a lot of pain when thinking about what my grandchildren are going to face in this world that the adults are creating. And just look around, you know, we're out there, there is a culture of struggle. Everybody is busy with needing, greed, khamdanut, wanting, shopping, speedy, struggle. And there's a culture of loneliness and a culture of disconnection and a culture of people watching screens and far away from each other, even though they're all connected with everybody with Facebook, but no one's looking at each other in the eyes, and no one somehow can find the intimacy, and we're in a difficult time, and there's a culture of pathology. I'm just getting all these kind of medical experts saying that, you know, everyone should be on Ritalin. A third of the young people in the UK have a psychiatric diagnosis. One third. Crazy. And that's why actually the British Parliament decided that mindfulness would be a really good thing, because they just realized they can't treat one third of the British kids with psychiatric drugs. I had it good, by the way. I had a different, I'm baby boomer. Baby boom, we had a great time. I used to go in the 60s down to Richmond to a hotel there, dancing to the Rolling Stones. There was like 50 people in the room. And we knew them. And, you know, we were in a kind of ecstasy of making change in society. Timothy Leary was out there as a kind of angelic professor. we had it good. But I look around now and I do think things are tighter. And we've got these real struggle ahead of us and in our life around us. And how are we going to solve those problems? And I think we need another place. We need another view. We need another teaching which the Western world doesn't really have. The solutions always come from another place. Einstein said, you can't solve problems with the same mind that created them. We're trying to solve problems with the same mind. More Ritalin. So in a way, we need to wake up from the dream out there. And when we wake up, we do find, we can find that our default place Our default condition is joy and freedom. We were not made twisted. We may feel we became akum, twisted a bit on the journey, but we were not made twisted. God didn't make mistakes. We have in us a basic purity, a basic joy, a basic freedom, a fundamental happiness in our bones, in our cells, in our the blood running through our veins, the mind seeing the stars, the love that we feel for each other, the song that we can hear when we listen to the trees and the birds, and our bodies and our minds are all playing music, and we can hear that and we can enjoy every minute. So there is default place, that is our default place, and the Buddha said it very clearly. The third noble truth, namely Nibbana, is not an unreachable goal behind the beyond, which we need many, many lifetimes in order to get to one day. The third noble truth, the truth of enlightenment, the truth of Nibbana, is a truth, just like the first noble truth. The first noble truth is suffering is inherent in our experience being born into a body. It doesn't say life is suffering. It says suffering will be there because we're born into a body and we're busy surviving. Okay, we're all happy with that truth, that we know. Oh, we all this one we all know. But the third truth is just another truth. It's the same truth of the Four Noble Truths. It's that our default place is freedom. So there's something actually positive in that, that if the default is freedom, but that we suffer, the second truth says we suffer because we're attached. We don't suffer because we have to suffer. We suffer for a reason. And if we're attached, and that's the cause of suffering, we're stuck, we're bound to things, we're in some prison that we made, then we can get out. It doesn't mean that suffering is just something that we have to have all our life. We can get out because it's there for, it's produced by attachment, a process, and we can undo that. So if we feel kind of in our life that we're wearing a suit kind of that doesn't fit, that we've got clothes that don't fit us, called our personality, called society, called parents, called whatever, we've got these clothes that don't fit us, they're just clothes that can be taken off. So there's a question, and I think that's one of the questions that came up, why whoever of you in the interviews was saying, I don't quite understand what I'm doing here. I think that one of the problems is, yeah, I look around at life and it doesn't quite seem like enlightenment, and I can't quite listen to that music that you're talking about. But how does breathing, how does connecting to my breath do anything? I mean, how can I connect to my breath and that solves life's problems? But it does. And it does because it's another way of looking at reality. It's a way of seeing. As we sit doing nothing, things come up. We may not like them. Tiredness comes up. Boredom might come up. Pain might come up. Lots of thoughts. We don't know why. It doesn't happen to my cat when she sits there for like 6 hours in one place without moving. But it happens to us when we sit here for like half an hour and just want to run away. But so one of the things that seeing shows us, it shows us our prison. It shows us where we are stuck, where we are attached. And if we don't see our prison, we cannot get out of it. We don't know what the walls are. We don't know that we're locked inside it. We just feel life is sort of, basa. We're just going on and on and on, working, living, and so on. What's the point? Because we don't notice the prison. And there is a nice Sufi story that I thank you, Raphael, for reminding me about it. About a Muslim who was in prison, and he wrote to his friend saying, please, please, please send me a gun or a screwdriver or some tools or a hammer. I want to break the lock and get out. So after a while, he was very impatient, after a while a parcel came, and he opened it really fast, and there was no hammer and no screwdriver and no tools and no gun. And he was very angry. He threw the packet in the corner. But he took a look inside, he said, and he realized it's a prayer carpet. He thought it was a total disaster. He threw it in the corner. But after a couple of weeks, he realized he had nothing to do there anyway, so he might as well pray. So he spread the prayer carpet and started to pray 5 times a day. He prayed and he prayed and he prayed 5 times a day to Allah. After about 3 weeks, one day when his nose was very close to the carpet, for the first time, he really looked at the design of the carpet, at exactly what the design of the carpet was like. And he realized that the design of the carpet was the design of the lock to his prison door. And because of that, he could open the lock and get out. So we may want to break the doors of our prison with a hammer, but actually we can understand it by seeing the way it's all made, the way the lock is made. And mindfulness is what we're doing here. And one of the things we notice about mindfulness is that we notice that we don't notice. And that's already useful. We notice that we don't notice. We notice that we miss things. We notice that we forget things. We forgot our default joy. We forgot it. The Pali word for mindfulness is sati. And one of the translations of sati is to remember. And to remember is to come back, to remember who we are, to remember how we are, to remember what we can be, to remember to see clearly, to remember to enjoy and listen to that music of our life. Sati, mindfulness, is about shining the light on places that we forgot or we don't notice. And just the example of the walking meditation we did today. We're walking all day, every day, and we don't notice that we're walking. So it's as if the walking is happening in ignorance. We just don't notice. We don't notice the ground, we don't notice the sky, we don't notice the birds. We just think what we have to do to get to the car. So mindfulness is about shining the light into places that we've forgotten, that are hidden, that we lost. What does happen to us then, very often, is that as soon as we're mindful, up comes a load of stuff that we don't want. tiredness, boredom, resistance. We're sitting here, as I say, minding our own business, and up comes all this stuff, jiva. Where does that come from? My God. I'm just sitting here quietly. I'm not hurting anybody. You know? How is it that boredom, tiredness, resistance, anger, I want to run away, I want to escape, I want to stop this thing, I don't know why I'm here. Where does that come from? But that's exactly seeing the prison door. When we see the prison door, we can get out. It comes up because we are still and quiet. We're not running away from anything. We're not escaping into screens and into wanting to run away somewhere else and wanting to go somewhere else that's better and wanting to... We're not. We just sit and the stuff comes up like still water. We can see the bottom, or the stuff floats up from the bottom of the pool. So we're still water and we watch and we see stuff floating up. And all the stuff that floats up, even if it's unpleasant, are messages for us. They have meaning. They're all the stuff we've gathered on the way. They're all the junk that we've collected on the journey. We may find, just a small example, we may feel tense or anxious. It just happens. We may feel anxious. Daga. Then what happens? How is our breathing? Ah, my breathing is tight. Ah, okay, where is it tight? Oh, maybe here. Oh, I feel the breathing is contracted here. Ah, that's interesting. And it goes with certain thoughts of, well, I better not say. It goes with certain thoughts of worry. What will happen? What will happen next week? What I have to do? What the problem is? Ah, there's thoughts, they have worry in them. The body is reacting, the body is responding. And there's feeling of tightness, there's feeling of emotion. Okay, there are thoughts that go with it. Ah, okay, I see them. And then it's gone. And then it's passed by. And something else happens, like lunch. It's gone. Where was all that worry? It's gone. What worry? That was last week, last day, last minute. That's gone. We purify ourselves that way. We notice the stuff coming up. We notice it. We don't run away from it. We don't escape from it. We see it. We hold it in attention. We work with it. It's the Choma Gelim, the raw material. And we always know that it's coming and it's going. It has a life of its own, but it's always disappearing. The important thing with all of this is non-identification, ihizdahut, to see what comes up as a phenomena. It's basically the whole process of purification, tihur, of cleaning the junk, is about seeing these things that come up not as me, and mine, and my problem, and I'm a victim, and I'm in trouble, and it's difficult, and I cannot, but seeing these things as phenomena, as tofa'ot, that come and go. To be able to step out of the movie is what we're doing here. We're learning it. We do it a bit by bit. We step out of the movie. And then we find that we are bigger than the movie. We are bigger than the issues. We are freer than the issues because they don't dominate our whole world. We step out. We watch them come and go. This is vipassana. This is insight, tovana. The understanding, clearly what these things are, what's coming up for us, whatever it is, whatever you're experiencing in this hall or in the walking or in the eating, seeing it clearly and seeing that it doesn't really belong to us, it's an experience that comes and goes. That's vipassana. And we can do it in a way in two directions. One is zoom in. Zooming in is kind of powering up our awareness, giving our awareness a sharpness and a clarity like a light, like a laser that is seeing what goes on like a microscope. We see the breath, we see the parts of the breath, we see what we're made of, we see the sensations, the experiences, we break up the world into its elements, we hear sounds and birds and trees and sky and thoughts, and we see, begin to zoom in and in a way lefarek, to break up experience into its elements in order to see it clearly. Vipassana, by the way, is V is between, is to really see things not just one stream kind of summary, sikkum of everything, which is problematic. And the sikkum of everything is usually ezebasa. But instead of that, we actually see it piece by piece. This is the experience, this is what's made of. A moment of anger, it's made of feelings, thoughts, body, contractions, changes, heat, and then it's gone. And instead, there's a moment of space and ease. So zoom in. And in zooming in, we look under the surface. There is some statistic that we only use 10% of our brain. So what about the 90%? And I'm sure mindfulness is beginning to reach out into the 90%. If we zoom in, we see things more deeply, more exactly, more clearly. What's under the surface? What's quiet that we don't usually pay attention to? Called Mama Daka, the still small voice. There's the voice of the divine, the sacred, Kadosh. It's not, doesn't come in big bang, 5 kilo hammer. It comes in a still small voice called Mama Daka. And we can sense it, we can zoom in to what our experience, and we will find something sacred there, something divine, something beautiful. So I'd like to read, if you wouldn't mind, to read that piece from my book. There's one piece in my book that sort of summarizes the whole thing, one keto, which I'd be very happy if all of you could read it.
אני גר באזור בו צומחים עצי זית רבים. הם בעלי אופי אקספרסיבי לעדים, המראה בבירור את כל מה שקרה להם. ענף שנחרט, כיווני האור והרוח ביחס לעץ, מחסור במים, כל אלה באים לידי ביטוי בגופו של העץ, בפני הגזע, בכיוון צמיחתו בנשירת העלים. צורת העץ היא הזיכרון שלו, הסנקרות שלו, תגובה לנסיבות. העץ לא סובל מכך, זהו הטבע. וכך גם אין שום סיבה שהזיכרונות יאהבו בעיה עבורנו. גם אנחנו מעוצבות ונבנות בידי החיים. אנחנו מקבלות גוף והוא מתפתח ומשתנה באופן דינמי בהתאם לתנאים. אנחנו מגיעות על כל רגע כפי שאנחנו. העולם מופיע מולנו ופוגש אותנו כפי שהוא. וכל שעלינו לעשות הוא להבחין בצורתם של הדברים ולהניח להם להיות עצמם. סיפורים הם רק סיפורים. נרטיבים הם רק נרטיבים. מה שמתהווה הוא רק מה שמתהווה. אם נרפא וניתן לזרם החיים לשאת אותנו, הפצעים ייעלמו. המקומות המצולקים יתרפחו והחיים ישובו לזרום דרכם. כך נוכל לצאת מכלא האתמול לגן ההווה. חוויה קשה יכולה להופיע כמו אורח גס רוח בביתנו ולגרום לנו לבכות. אך ברגע הבא נתחיל לפתע לצחוק והאורח ייעלם.
So another direction is zooming out. We can zoom out. And zooming out is seeing the bigness of things. Is being in the big mind and big heart. To feeling ourselves part of a big world. To be conscious, to meet consciousness. What is it that knows a thought? Our consciousness, to meet our consciousness as conscious human beings. This is the big mind. This is zooming out. And I want to quote a beautiful quote, that one of the best that I know, describing zooming out, the big mind. And actually it's from Eti Hillesum that lived during the Second World War in Holland. And she was writing this when the Gestapo were in the street outside. And she went into the big mind again and again and again. It's a beautiful, beautiful way she described it in her journal. I went to bed early last night, and from my bed I stared out through the large open window. And it was once more as if life, with all its mysteries, was close to me, as if I could touch it. I had the feeling that I was resting against the naked breast of life and could feel her gentle and regular heartbeat. I felt safe and protected, and I thought, how strange. It's wartime. There are concentration camps. I can say of so many of the houses I pass, here the son has been thrown into prison, there the father has been taken hostage, and an 18-year-old boy in that house over there has been sentenced to death. And these streets and houses are all so close to my own. I know how very nervous people are. I know about the mounting human suffering. I know the persecution and oppression and impotent fury. I know it all. And yet, at unguarded moments, when left to myself, I suddenly lie against the naked breast of life, and her arms round me are so gentle and so protective. And my own heartbeat is difficult to describe, so slow and so regular, and so soft, almost muffled, but so constant, as if it would never stop. So I want to continue with a kind of trying to break up our experience in a very gross way into, shall we say, three elements. I would say the ordinary mind, no mindfulness, the ordinary mind would see a pain in the body, would take ownership of it. It's mine, I feel the pain, it hurts me, I don't like it, it's hurting, I want it to stop, I'm going to the doctor, it's a problem, I have to deal with it, it's a nuisance, what do I do, who do I go to, how do I deal with it? And if it's in the retreat, the ordinary mind would say, oh, this retreat is terrible, it makes me, my body's hurting, when do I get out, when does it finish, let me look at my telephone, but I don't have it. Ordinary mind. The mindfulness mind would go in a different direction. Okay, there is experience of pain in the body. I turn towards my experience and see it as a phenomena. What is it saying, this pain in the back or the shoulder? Let me look at it. I'm interested in it. It's part of my experience. I need to take responsibility for it. Where is it? How is it? Where is it changing? How is it? Where is it not hurting? When does it stop? When does it start? What's it telling me? And how am I seeing of it and my love towards myself and my life changes it, softens it? I soften it with love. I soften it with the breath. I'm empowered. I'm back in power. I'm back in charge of my life again. No victim. So that will be a mindfulness way of looking at pain in the body. But there's one further way, and that's Dharma. And the Dharma is about a deeper truth of things. And we learn something from this process. We learn that we feel pain because there's attachment in it. We're attached to non-pain. We want non-pain. So we understand attachment. We understand that we can establish relationship with everything. That everything is in relationship. I'm in relationship to my body. My body is talking and I'm listening. We learn about relationships. We learn about our power and our capacity. Our power to see. Our capacity to feel, our power to let go of things, our power to trust what's happening, our power to be kind. We learn about our freedom, and all from a back that's hurting. Dharma is about the truth of things, and it's about learning our potential. So what we're doing here is in the end Dharma. In the end, it's a learning experience. It may help us actually when we walk out of this door from a sitting session in the hall to ask ourselves, what is it that I learned from this session just now? Meditation is about learning, it's about discovering, it's about learning our freedom. It's about learning to be less under control of things, controlled by things, by nasibot, by conditions. It's learning to be quietly connected with our life, just as it is. It's learning to dance with change that happens, rather than fighting it. And it's learning, as I say, qualities that we take in our life that hopefully we'll build day by day as we practice and we take into our life, and qualities that the world really needs this at this time especially. Qualities like kindness, like quietness, like wisdom, like inquiry after the truth. And those are the qualities that we build, even though we may not, maybe we don't notice it all the time, but we do. Okay, so we'll keep learning together. Thank you. We'll take a couple of minutes of quiet.